And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy.
All right, here we are. Another week ready to roll. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. One, Bills live.
Yeah, it was a great weekend, Brownie.
It was good.
Started off Friday night. We crossed paths at the stadium on the RJ night. What a night, man.
It was good.
I had an absolute blast from start to
finish. I know a lot of
people
have weighed in on this, but that doesn't mean we can't.
Well, we didn't get a chance to do it yet.
Yeah. It was great. The atmosphere was great. You could just – there was a buzz in the building.
Yeah.
Great job, by the way, to all our brethren over at the Sabres that put a lot of time in to pull that night together for Rick. A lot of hands involved.
Yeah, they were getting alumni recordings and all of that for, you know, weeks,
a lot of
leg months.
Work.
A lot of legwork. And, you know, to pull it off. And here's the thing, too, because whenever you do this, the same thing happened at all these ceremonies they have at Highmark for, like, you know, Bruce Smith halftime when they retired Thurman's jersey, when they do all that stuff. There's big regulations that every league puts on. You have this much time. You got to get this much done. And then off. And if you don't get it done in the allotted time, as, you know, the MSG viewers are seeing Rick's, RJ's banner being unfurled, if you don't get it done, there's an enormous fine involved. I mean, the club's just paying out cash. So they had to get it done. It has to be – they rehearsed it for days going in there. It was just – they pulled it off just perfectly. It was a great vibe in the building. I know you were there. You were at the opposite end watching from the far end. Yeah, it was just great.
So man. I was facing – Rick was facing me at my end when he was addressing the crowd. There were grown men openly crying.
Oh, I was choking
like
back
crying.
All the time. I did it like
– And I'm going to say this. So – it didn't take me until I was driving home to kind of fully realize what a guy that does it for this long can do for a fan base. And what I mean by that is, and for me, moving to this area 25 years ago, I was literally introduced to the Bills and the Sabres by Rick Jenneret and Van Miller.
Sure.
Like, that's how I was introduced to these two franchises. And that's pretty fortunate. I mean, if you're a Buffalo fan, you're pretty damn lucky to have those two to get introduced to two teams like that in your hometown, you know, if you're a Buffalo native, you know, born and raised. And I realized driving home after the game that Rick not only taught you how to root for a team, his broadcasts impacted how you felt about your team. It's an emotional tie.
Yeah.
And so when you see the personification of that standing in front of you after listening to him for so many years, it moves people emotionally. And we watch that unfold, like, right in front of us. It was pretty cool. Pretty cool.
And
I'm glad he got, you know, he got his night and everything. I mean, 51 years with one organization.
Dude.
My God, nobody's going to do that again.
And I was one of those guys. I was choking back tears a couple of times during the night. And I was standing there, and I was with my oldest son, and I are the ones who sit together. And, I was giving him a big hug during the whole thing. We were laughing. And it was just a great night. Obviously, we heard all day Friday, all the quintessential calls that he's made over the decades that were just iconic. And I remember being in this position, you'd watch the good teams, you know, with Dominic and then with Drury and all those guys, you know, all the great times we had and all the great calls. There were times when you'd be out, you weren't at the game, couldn't watch the game, whatever, the game was on or whatever, and you'd see something happen, you think, man, I want to hear what Rick said.
Yeah.
You know, I want to hear what Rick's call was. And you got a chance to hear all of that. Fun night. And the team the team comes through with a really nice win. It was, it could not have been better.
Bring him out after the game's over.
Could not have been better. Giving him the first star, giving them and getting the, on the team. And I tell you the truth, it was really genuine. Those players, they wanted a picture of that.
Oh yeah,
you know they wanted that.
They
picture.
They were crowding in there real fast.
They'll be. Everybody that was in that picture will be looking for a copy of it to put on the wall. Yeah.
I don't know if you heard this, but the players were all in on the night. Did you hear how they showed up to the arena?
With the suspenders.
With a turtleneck and suspenders. Everybody was dressed in a turtleneck and suspenders coming to the arena before they obviously changed into their uniforms. I thought that was a nice touch by the young guys. You know, you got to remember, you're talking about 21, 22, 23, 24-year-old guys that
who
only know Rick for the most part, maybe with the exception of Alex Tuck and a few others. Really don't know Rick for more than the 2 or 3 years they've been with the organization, you know? So to pay him that homage, I think, was a nice job by Granato's guys. So good job on them, too, for being all in on the night. Because it just brought the whole thing full circle. I mean, it brought it all the way around, you know, to the newest players, you know, that have only just begun to – you know, hear some of his calls and, you know, the last ones that there will be as he wraps it up at the end of the month. So, yeah, it was cool to – it was a had-to-be-there kind of night. And so, you know, as I tweeted, you know, a day later, I felt privileged to be there. It was special an evening.
And it was
– the only thing that screwed up the timing as far as the people that had to orchestrate this thing were the standing ovations that went a lot longer than I think even they anticipated. And they're looking at their watch going, oh, geez. And you got to give credit to the owner.
Oh, yeah.
Because Terry Pegula, you know, the guy's a successful businessman for a reason. He knows how to read the room, and he read the room. The fans said it all, just as he said. So he cut his speech short, turned it over to Rick early. I mean, good job by Terry reading the room. Because
he knew. I mean, And Duffer did a nice job, too. I mean, they kept it moving, and they had rehearsed all this, and Terry just said, okay, I'm not going to get a chance to talk here. Just go ahead and love on him. I'm out. You know? And he just stepped away. A great night. They unfurled the carpets and stuff, and, you know, he's kind of worried. They brought him out on the ice, and two guys were helping him because
– Yeah, Cody Eakin and Tuck.
So they got him out, and it could not have been better. So I'm kudos to the Sabres for pulling off a night like that, a celebration like that, for paying tribute to a guy who has meant so much to their fan base. Even though he never laced them up, he helped us all love the team a little more. And congratulations to Rick. He's got five more. I think four games left.
Handful of games.
Yeah, handful of games left to call, and that they gave him his night Friday night, and it was. Well worth it. And I'm, you know, kudos to all the people who showed up. Rick on his Instagram put out a thing today. It was great. Rick had an Instagram post today that, you know, was great. And I go find it online. I'm not even going to describe it. So it was great.
It was a keeper.
So tremendous night, and we just wanted to start out with that today because we were both there. We got a chance to have a pop between periods of the first and second, and what a night it was. It was one of those nights, and I've had a couple of them because, you know, I played all those games for the Bills and in Highmark and Rich Stadium and all those game playoffs, all that yiggity. I did a lot of stuff as a player, but some of the most memorable moments in my time here in Buffalo, which is over 30-plus years now, as a Buffalo guy, my most memorable moments as a fan have come in that building, in the arena, and the odd. Actually, the arena for me. So it's just one more of those. One of the all-time great moments for me as a Bill and a former Bill and a Buffalo guy now. This is one of the all-time great ones. I was really, really stoked to see it, and still I'll be thinking about it for a long time.
Yeah, it was cool.
I tweeted out a picture of my son and I in our seats, you know, looking down, kind of like at this moment right here, where they were on the ice kind of coming on and off. And just, it meant something to me. And I've had some moments like that where I was, you know, one of the guys, you know, in the uniform. But it's different when you're a fan and you don't have any real skin in that game to be so moved by. And I was. So I appreciate it from the Sabres and the Pegulas and Duffer and Michelle Zumwalt, all the, you know, the whole crew at down at the arena for putting that on and doing such a great job. Thank you.
We've got some NFL news and notes to get to, and it begins with the AFC East. Over the weekend, an intra-divisional trade between the Dolphins and the Patriots, with Devontae Parker going up to New England, along with a fifth-round draft choice next year, in exchange for a third-round pick. So that was kind of something you don't see every day. Ironically, Steve, the Dolphins and the Patriots have done this before with the same position player. Remember the Wes Welker trade?
Right.
Which obviously the Patriots won in spades. My God. I mean, the guy had like 300 catch seasons. Obviously playing with Brady certainly helps in that regard.
Yeah.
But, you know, Parker was essentially a luxury type player with what they have. He wasn't cheap. He's making money. And I don't know, Steve. He's certainly a physical traits receiver. He can be productive. His issue is consistency. He's just never really ever put a full season together where he has dominated as his physical traits indicate he should.
Right.
And I think that's been the missing link with him. Not a tough guy either. Has missed a lot of games with hangnail kind of injuries. You know, not a guy that's going to gut it out and stick it out for a game and play. So for me, while certainly the Patriots improved their talent quotient at the receiver position, I don't know. I'm not sold on Devontae Parker. I'm sold on his physical gifts. But in terms of what he's been able to put on the field the last several years, I mean, to me, there's not enough of it feel good about it.
He's had one full season in his entire career that he's played all the games, and that was 2019.
Right, and he had a 1,200-yard season that year. Yeah, it's his only 1,000-yard season.
Right. He missed, you know, and all the way back to 2015, so he'll be going into his eighth year coming up. He's never played a full slate of games. Last year he only played in 10 games. The year before only in 14 games. Then, of course, 16 and – in 2019, then 11, 13, 15, 14 for the remainder of the early part of his career. That sometimes can be an issue, and I know this, he's not going to get healthier as he gets closer to 30. So we'll see. I mean, he's a good player, no question about it. The guy brings something to the table, and I know why the Patriots wanted him. They need somebody who's
they can't draft
a consistent
one, that's
pro.
Why.
Yeah, they get, well, yeah, exactly.
They don't know how to draft one.
They can't pick one, so they're going to let's steal one from somebody else or trade for him. So that's what they did. Devontae Adams makes the Patriots better. I'll say that. There's no question about
Devontae
it.
Devontae Parker.
Devontae Parker makes him better. No question about it. He's a better player than I would – and more consistent even than what they've had.
More
even though,
physically gifted for
yes.
sure.
And even his inconsistencies are the one thing that you knock about him, and his availability is the one thing that the Patriots – he'll probably be better for the Patriots than the guys they've had, even if he continues to struggle to get on the field.
Well, they need a number one receiver. That was the talk up in New England. I don't know if he is consistent enough of a player to be that, but he's the best option that they have now on their roster, right. And it's not even close.
Right.
Just because of the physical gifts that he brings to the table. Frank Gore is going to sign a one-day contract with the San Francisco 49ers to retire a Niner. He was drafted by the Niners, as we know. He retires, Steve, with exactly 16,000 rushing yards in his 16-year career. And, Steve, he finished 15 yards short of an even 20,000 total yards from scrimmage. 19,985 yards from scrimmage.
Yes.
Is Gore a first ballot Hall of Famer?
Well, I have to say yes.
I wrestle with that. I think he's in the Hall of Fame. Every running back that's over 14,000 career yards is in. It's not even a question. But it took him 16 years to get 16,000 yards. I believe he has 9 total 1,000-yard seasons, 2 separate stints of 4 straight 1,000-yard seasons, interrupted by 1 year where he fell short of that. amazing longevity. So here's my question to you, Steve. He's a Hall of Famer. There's no question about it. My question to you is, how much respect does longevity get from other NFL alumni when you see a guy who plays at the most punishing position in football play that long and play that effectively?
Longevity is the absolute trump card of respect. The longer you play, the more you're respected by your peers of any era.
Because they know how hard it is.
They know how hard it is. If you play that long at any position, quarterback, wide receiver, offensive lineman, if you can play 16 years at any position, let alone running back, you are universally respected without question. It's now here's the thing about Frank, and because he never played on one of those championship teams, it was never one of those guys that grabbed the headlines and stayed there for 4 or 5 years in the NFL. He was never the elite of the elite throughout his career.
Right.
He was good always, never spectacular.
He's like the quintessential steady Eddie.
That's right.
Player.
That's right. And
know what you're going to get.
But he was also a stellar teammate, a great team guy, always an asset to the locker room. All of that stuff going on.
Big reason he was brought here.
That's right. And that is. It's very, very important. It's very important. Now, I know this, when you start talking to media pukes like us about Hall of Fame and all that, and they start, weighing it in both hands, and they tend to poo-poo the thing that the players really don't, and that's longevity. They think he's an aggregator. They call it an aggregator. He's just because he hung around a long time. That's why he got all those numbers.
But it's really hard to hang around.
It's harder to hang around than it is to get the numbers. That's where they get it backwards, in my opinion, and a lot of players' opinions. It's harder to stay in the league than it is to aggregate numbers.
Now, granted, it took him 3 more seasons, and he still didn't get the numbers, but he came very close in 16 seasons to what Walter Payton did in 13 seasons. Gore, 19,985 total yards from scrimmage in 16 years. Walter Payton in 13 years, 21,264 yards. And then in 3 fewer seasons, Walter Payton rushed for 726 more yards than Frank Gore. But I think even there you can argue eras. When Walter Payton was playing, it was 3 yards in a cloud of dust kind of football, and he never played with a great quarterback. Jim McMahon's probably the best quarterback he played with in his career. I mentioned it earlier, 14,000 yards. Any running back over 14,000 yards is in. They're going to have to dial that number back pretty soon because running backs just don't get the touches anymore. In the league we watch now.
It will have to be a guy who is an enormous difference maker under the new era and the way they do it. A guy like an Alvin Kamara
it's going to be like a total yards from scrimmage figure.
That's right.
That's what they're going to look at
that's
first
right.
now.
It'll be touches, receptions, yards per touch, some sort of stat metric that some guy will come up with.
It'll have to be tweaked, though, because you can't go by the old figures.
But it will be a guy like that. Who comes out and who also can rush the ball, like a Jonathan Taylor, maybe a Derrick Henry, who has dominated the rushing, the league for a couple of years and carried his team to the number one seed, that kind of thing, and have to do that for a year or two, couple of years more. If he does that, Derrick Henry, despite what his career numbers may say, he'll have to be considered as a serious Hall of Fame candidate, and then they'll look at his statistics and say, why are they different than Emmitt Smith, Walter Payton, Earl Campbell, Jim Brown, those kind of guys. And then they'll evaluate it from that standpoint.
The Sharks are circling in Washington regarding deposed Commanders owner Daniel Snyder. On Saturday night, A.J. Perez of Front Office Sports reported that the House Committee on Oversight and Reform, which is already investigating allegations of sexual and financial misdeeds in the Washington Commanders front office, has been informed by one source that the team did not give the full share of ticket revenue to visiting teams as required by NFL bylaws. For those of you that aren't familiar with this, the gate revenue, ticket revenue on a game day, 60% of that revenue goes to the home team, 40% is to be distributed to the visiting team's coffers. And that's how it goes. These allegations are pretty damning. I mean, so the House Committee on Oversight and Reform is sinking their teeth into this. And I'm just going to tell you, federal investigators are not people you want looking into your business, because they're going to find something if you did something wrong. And Peter King, in his weekly Football Morning in America column, theorized that this could be a way out for the NFL to make an ownership change. If the feds come in and find wrongdoing that violates the league's bylaws, he's wriggled out of a couple of things already. I don't know how you wriggle out of this one. They'd have him dead to rights, be able to move out that ownership group, and then leave it open for another.
And I know we all have fun. Fun and sometimes not fun. We're all cynical about, you know, the NFL is a money driven league, and they'll, you know, they'll set aside minorities and women and diversity and all that in favor of the dollar kind of thing. We all make jokes about it, and they make snide marks about it. Listen, if you really think that's true, and you've got one of their ranks withholding money from the others, we'll put that to the test. We'll put that to the test.
Watch how fast stuff happens
if they find out.
House and Oversight Committee finds.
And I'll say this, on the big picture of things, one team withholding 40% or a percentage of 40% from whatever visiting team they happen to be talking about in any given week or year is a drop in the bucket in the big picture. But it's not nothing.
Well, I'm just...
It's not nothing.
I'm just fascinated. You know, we've talked more than once on this show about what a ridiculous offseason it's been in terms of player movement with trades in addition to free agency. But what about what a shocking offseason it's been from an ownership perspective? Between Stephen Ross and Daniel Snyder, I mean, these are damning allegations. One dealing with the very integrity of the game, and the other now dealing with finances that impact the other 31 owners.
Yeah, this is really
so you
really
attack the integrity of the game and the owner's wallet? If they have legitimate evidence in both cases, watch how fast those two are bounced.
Yeah, and it's never been – I mean, part of the commissioner's job description is, you know, he's the owner's mouthpiece. He does their bidding, and he takes bullets for them too. I mean, he's like – he becomes a bad guy when the owner's policies or if one or two owners do something wrong. He kind of stands out there and takes the slings and arrows. Yeah, he'll take the heat for them. Here's the difference between this. You might have – 28 or 30 owners, or worse yet, 16 owners coming at you and saying, listen, we ain't putting up with that anymore. We don't need the headache. We need to have him voluntarily sell the club, make it happen. That's a problem, you know, because I'm sure there are some of the guys in there. You think, give me an example. Stan Kroenke, who's on the hook for $750 million to St. Louis for the relocation fee, he's saying, you're going to make me pay that, and you got this guy over here holding out on us? I don't think so. You know, there's some legitimate beef there, right? So, yeah, this is a problem, and it's at the highest levels. And for expediency, the easy thing for the league is to say, listen, bro, we need you to sell.
Yeah.
I'm sure that he will fight tooth and nail not to do that.
He has the whole way already.
It's really interesting. It's really interesting.
Yeah. The report said he kept a very low profile at the ownership meetings. He's technically not even involved in day-to-day operations. His wife is. That was part of the agreement reached from the last incident with the sexual allegations and the toxic work environment. Now you've got I'm telling you, if this House and Oversight Committee finds something like hard evidence, you messing with other billionaires' money, watch how swift
the action is. I don't know how fast a thing like that moves. Seriously.
Not to, and but I'm sorry to interrupt, but not to mention the fact, Steve, this is a team that is not realizing its full revenue earning potential either. 51,000 average attendance last year at Washington home games. 31st in the league in a top 10 market.
Yeah.
That's not good either.
Now, some of that, and some of that is attributed also to ownership because
people are fed up.
Rumors are saying he has not maintained the stadium to NFL standards. He's trying to get the stadium to be so decrepit that they have to give him a new stadium. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
It's a political move, which, you know, that you almost have to say, you kind of shrug your shoulders and say, everybody, you know, kind of think that, right? So, particularly in a privately owned stadium. So I just really feel like, This is going to be an interesting. We're never going to know exactly what happens and who said what and why it happened, but we're going to see the results, no question. It's going to be a public result.
All I'm saying, if the feds are involved and they find something, he's done.
You and I have talked about this before.
They don't get brought up on federal charges and get out of them. Once the feds come in, as you said, they don't waste their time.
They don't want to waste time in litigation
with cases they can't win.
Right.
If they're bringing charges, it's because they have overwhelming evidence and you are going to jail. Yeah. That's it. I can't think of the last person that got off of federal charges. I don't know if it's ever happened in my lifetime.
If they bring federal charges, which
you're
done. Which they haven't done.
Stick a fork
in you.
They
have not brought federal
charges.
No.
They're just starting the investigation. So, but now they're looking into these financial misdeed allegations.
Right. And here's the thing. Here's the problem with the Fed. If he's withholding money from his
fellow owners,
it breaks the rules of the league.
Yeah.
It might be breach of contract, but it's not a federal offense. Do you know what I mean? It's
well,
just breaking
unless
the rules.
They can...
That's why none of the guys who cheat in the NFL worry about it. It's breaking the rules. It's not breaking the law.
There's a big difference. I wonder if there's a way where federal investigators can label it something that would carry a criminal charge, whether it's embezzlement, because you're technically keeping the money from yourself and not distributing it to your fellow owners. I mean, does that fall under the guise of embezzlement? I don't know. But I would imagine they're going to try to find something to pin on him, especially if they have overwhelming evidence.
And here's the thing, too. We're salt of the earth down at the bottom of the food chain. So
I love how you've been describing us today.
Right,
it's great.
At the highest levels,
media pukes.
I don't know what the feds may think or may not, because you're talking about the National Football League. You're talking about a marquee landmark case. For whatever federal prosecutor gets this put on his desk, so they're gonna get some mileage out of this in their career. They're gonna comb through this. Anybody with any political aspirations, whether it's a junior senator or whatever congressman, would like to have
not even
be
the mighty
guy.
NFL is
right.
Bigger than government.
Right, would like to appear tough on crime by taking out a guy who's perceived to be a bad guy anyway.
Well, yeah, who's seen largely as a villain, even in his own home city.
Right. So they're going to get looked at. This is merely the beginning.
Tip of the iceberg.
Opening salvo of a long, dirty battle.
We do have a Twitter conversation to get to today. What final move by the Bills would make your offseason complete? And that doesn't just mean free agency. It could be something that happens later this month in the draft, as we are now in April. So you can let us know at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, or you can hit us up on the tweet sheet at 1BillsLive. We do have some Bills news and notes to bring your way as well. In addition, we have some other happenings around the league, including some very interesting veteran cornerbacks still sitting out there without a new free agent contract. We'll get into all of that when we return. Here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health, it's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. And some other news and notes we wanted to get to. There are a host of veteran corners still sitting out there in free agency. The biggest name is probably Stephon Gilmore. We learned last week that the Bills kicked the tires on Patrick Peterson before he ultimately re-signed with the Vikings for 1 year and $4 million. I think Gilmore would probably cost more in the $6 to $8 million range per season on a short deal, which is probably too rich for Buffalo with the money they have available right now. But hypothetically, Steve, let's just have fun for a second.
Okay.
Hypothetically, your thoughts on Gilmore and just the idea, as remote as it might be, of returning to the Bills for a second go-round.
He probably would not mind coming back and playing for Buffalo, no question about it.
Not for a contender.
He would love to come back and play and maybe try and win a ring. He's a perfect fit because he knows the score here in Buffalo. He would be probably surprised and pleasantly surprised and shocked at the change that has happened since he left.
Yep.
Yeah, he'd do it. I don't think he'd have an issue with it, and I don't think the team would obviously like it. I mean, the guy can play. He's a really good corner. Now, he's long in the tooth, no question. He's not the player he once was, but his guile and his savvy would make more than make up for that. He'd be a great addition in the locker room. We always knew he was a really strong guy in the locker room.
Self-motivated.
Self-motivated, smart. He's a real pro. And he earned every cent of a big, big contract he signed with the New England Patriots. So,
not to mention getting two rings in the process.
That's right. And so I'm all about it. It's a great, if you could fit him under, if he came back here to play, if you could fit him under the cap, and I'm sure he would fit in culturally. And, yes, you know, he'd fit in the locker room. He'd give you some help in the division. Patriots won't be as good without him, even though he's probably not going to be there anyway. And he could give you some insights as to some of their personnel on that game when you run around and match up with those guys.
Yeah.
So I think it's great. That's the kind of guy you need to sign. If you're me, if I'm the GM, I think you need another one of those one-year guys who's coming in to try a little something to prove.
Yeah.
And Steph Gilmore fits it to a T. And it's just at the perfect spot, the perfect timing for a team like Buffalo. Now, that just because I say all that, I think the possibilities are really remote.
Yeah, I do too.
Really remote.
I just think he's still going to command a decent buck, and it's money that the Bills just don't have right now. You'd have to move veterans off the roster just to get him in here, I think, to fit the money under, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, he may shock everybody to see he takes a veteran minimum deal to come to Buffalo to do it because he thinks he's going to win it. But he's made, obviously we know he's made a pile of money. Maybe it means something to him personally to come back and do that. That would surprise me more than anything.
Yeah, it would.
Yeah.
I mean, he got –
because he's got a market value.
He had the good fortune of being traded to Charlotte, which was a stone's throw from his house. He grew up in Rock Hill, South Carolina, which is literally just over the state line. If I remember right, having done this drive a few times, you literally pass Bank of America Stadium on 77 going south. And a half hour later, maybe even less, you're in South Carolina and Rock Hill is the first city you hit off 77. Playing close to home after winning two rings might carry more weight than anything else, even if he doesn't have a chance to win in Carolina, which looks like he doesn't stays there.
And he's, like I said, he doesn't need to sign for a veteran minimum deal just to do it because he's got a market value. I mean, there's some teams
even
that
now
pay.
At 32.
Yeah, even now at 32, he can play, and he's got some cachet and some ability to give a team.
Speaking of,
and you got to pay for that.
Yeah. Speaking of cornerbacks, LSU cornerback and draft prospect Derek Stingley Jr. is known as one of the top corners in the draft. It's basically Sauce Gardner, then him, by many accounts. He has reportedly recovered fully from his Lisfranc foot injury and will do all the drills during his pro day on Wednesday this week, according to a source, a month after Dr. Anderson, a renowned foot surgeon, cleared him. Stingley has reportedly been running fast in training. That's according to NFL Network's Ian Rappaport. So the interesting thing about Stingley is his very mercurial college career. Got off to a flying start his first 2 years in an LSU uniform. Super productive, plays on the ball, just did everything. And then his last year was just, it was missing something. Very inconsistent, not nearly like the previous two seasons. So it's raised some question marks. And if he performs admirably at his pro day, does well in interviews, I think he could go a long way to convincing people, okay, that 1 year of inconsistency was more of an anomaly than anything else. And this kid will be a stud in the league. So where teams come down on that is going to be very interesting because he's not an easy case because of that fact. So,
yeah, Lisfranc's nothing serious. It takes time to heal, and you got to be patient with it.
That's the horse rider injury, right? Yeah, people who rode horses used to suffer from that foot injury when they would fall off a horse and their foot would get caught in the stirrup. And they would suffer that's where the name comes from, I believe.
It's when you sprain the arch of your foot.
Yeah.
And it's the big bone that comes back from your big toe, right where that knuckle hits in the middle above your arch, those ligaments get strained. I had one. It was a 10-week injury right during the season. It's a crusher because you can't rock up on your toe to push off. And
so you lose explosion.
Yeah, you can't. Yeah, and it's got to be, it's one of those. Can't do anything until it's 100%, and you can't get 100% unless you don't do anything. Uh-huh. So,
there's no way you're playing through that.
Yeah, you can't. You don't.
I mean, you can play through it, but you're not going to be the same player.
No, because then you're asking for, long term problems. So yeah, it's an unfortunate injury, but it's not chronic. Once you're healed, you're okay, and just move forward. So good for him for getting out of it. But you're right. There's always an enormous amount of question marks with these guys coming out. Rarely do you have a guy who answers all the questions right away. If they're not on-field questions, they're character questions or work ethic questions or commitment questions or, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
Stingley's going to come in with, all these guys got one or two little warts, but Stingley, guys like Stingley and the top guy, Sauce Gardner, those guys have fewer and smaller warts than other guys.
Yeah.
But they're still unknowns.
First day of off-season conditioning program for four NFL clubs that have new head coaches. By rule, they are permitted to start sooner. Those four teams starting today with classroom work and stuff like that with their coaches, Miami, Chicago, New Orleans, and the New York Giants, as today is day one for Brian Daboll as a head coach with his players. The Bills begin their off-season program on April 19th. Yeah, that is 2 weeks from tomorrow.
The first 2 weeks of the program, you can strength conditioning and rehab. That's it. You just come in and work out.
And they can do some classroom work, I
believe.
That's
2 weeks of that. And then 3 weeks after that, you can go on field and you can have individual player instruction. You can, coaches can be out there and go through drills and team practices, but you can't have live contact and you can't compete. You can't go offense against defense.
Right.
And no drill work like one-on-ones even or anything like that. You can't go an offensive player against a defensive player. And then
a lot of technique work.
Right. And then that's for 3 weeks. So you're at 5 weeks in. Then after 5 weeks in, you go to phase three, which is next a 4 week period, and you can have 10 days of organized team activity, OTAs. No live contact is ever permitted, but you can go 7-on-7. You can go 9-on-7, which is 7-on-7 is passing. 9-on-7 is running.
Yeah, run fits.
And 11-on-11 drills are permitted, but you can't go live. You can't be in pads or any of that stuff. So it goes, step it up. And it's 9 weeks of stuff. And I'll say this. You'll have guys that come in and through – with permission of the club and the club will okay, it's no big, but you'll have, for a team like Buffalo, you'll have 95% attendance. and usually more than that, but you'll have one or two guys say, listen, I got to go to my brother's wedding. I got to go to the, you know, I got to go this. I got to my mom's birthday. Got that. Guys will take a couple of days during that 9 weeks, say, hey, listen, I got to go do this. I got to do that, particularly veteran players. But then when they get into that last 4 or 5 weeks, they'll start to, you'll get, no question, you'll get high 90s attendance. And that's all across the league, not just here in Buffalo.
Let's go to the phones at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, where we are asking you what final move by the Bills would make your offseason complete. We lead off today with Judy in Buffalo. What do you got for us, Judy?
Well, earlier you were talking about the diminishing role of running backs in the NFL, and I want to know if Zach Moss has a future with the Bills. He seems to be underutilized. He disappeared the latter part of the season.
Right.
So what do you think?
Yeah,
it's a good question.
I will say this, Judy. I think that picture will come into greater focus based on what the Bills do between now and the end of the draft. We know that they obviously signed Duke Johnson in free agency, who I would probably argue is now the best pass-catching back on the roster, at least in terms of proven track record at the NFL level. So that could potentially impact Moss's time on the field. If they draft a running back as well, he's going to be fighting for a job.
Yeah.
He will. I mean,
absolutely.
Think about it. Devin Singletary, Duke Johnson, a draft choice, and Zach Moss. They're probably not keeping – well, I mean, and Tywan Jones is still here for special teams. So
here's the thing. I mean,
crowded quick.
Zach Moss is just like everybody else. They're bringing in competition.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to make him compete for it. He's not just because he was drafted last year. Doesn't mean he's automatic,
right?
So he's got to show up and show up big to keep his job, because he's going to be in competition. Just like last year, they kept four guys active. And it would be Devin Singletary, Duke Johnson, presumably, Tywan Jones, and an other. And who the other is, Zach Moss is in the mix, as well as maybe a draft pick, or certainly they're going to have another running back on the roster for training camp, no matter where they get him from. Yeah. Zach Moss's future with the Buffalo Bills is up to him.
It's a make or break year.
Yeah, it's up to him.
I mean, this is year three, right? Yeah, year three. It's make or break year. I mean,
yeah, and it also
to stick and stay.
I'll say this too: a little bit is up to the Bills as well. So, because if you really want to upgrade your running back position and you take a guy in the second round, third round, that may dictate as much as anything Zach Moss's future.
That's what I'm saying.
Like, yeah,
depending on who they add and when they add him,
and it may come down to what he has already showed him, and if that's enough, and what they really think of him deep down.
Break time for us here. More of your phone calls when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, here we are, face to face, One Bills Live, here to take more of your phone calls as we're asking you, what final move by the Bills would make your offseason complete? 803-0550 to jump on board. And we go now to Bob in Rochester. What do you got first, Bob? You're on One Bills Live.
First of all, I love the show, guys.
Thanks.
And Steve, you belong in the hall.
There you go.
Thank you. Very nice.
So here's the final move. This is what I saw on the internet this morning, and I love this trade for the Bills.
Okay. Oh, can't wait to hear
the Bills. They give up their first and third round draft picks this year.
Okay.
They give up their first and fifth round draft picks next year for the seventh overall pick of the draft to the New York Giants. They get the Giants pick and they draft Sauce Gardner. I'd love to hear what you guys have to say about that.
That is a lot to give up for a corner.
Two ones, a third, and a fifth for Sauce Gardner.
Two ones, a third, and a fifth.
Eesh, that is
I don't
a
know
lot.
If I like that for the Bills.
Not for a corner. They didn't even give up that for Josh Allen.
If
I don't know.
What if you could give up one first and a third and a fifth?
I don't think that they could move from 25 to 7.
Well, how about I don't know. I don't give up 2 1s.
I don't know
Sauce
if I'm
Gardner.
Doing that for a corner. That's my issue.
Wow, well, yeah.
That's a premium to pay.
Certainly, I'll say this, though, Bob. The Giants might think about doing it.
For 2 1s?
You know?
Yeah,
for 2 1s, a 3 and a 5? Yeah, the Giants might say, yeah, oh, we'll do it.
But then you have your other lockdown corner opposite Trey.
Yeah, and you have no first-round picks for 3 years. And
well, this year and next. Well, you're getting Sauce this year, so you have your one.
So you're giving up
year.
A 1. I get it. Yeah, you're giving up 1-1. A 3 and a 5.
Right. You're going to need that one next year, though, because you're not going to be able to pay everybody that's coming up on new deals.
You have to be bold to go for it.
Well, yeah. I hear what you're saying, Bob.
I hear you,
Bob's
Bob.
Pushing all the cards. All the chips are in the middle of the table for Bob.
I like it, though. But I hear you, Bob. I get it. And, if they think this Sauce Gardner's the guy, and he is, I mean, by all accounts, he's the guy.
Problem is the Jets might take him at 4. So even moving
up
to 5.
You don't pull the trigger until the Giants are on the clock.
Yeah. Got to know your guys there.
Yeah. So, okay.
It's, right. Hey, it's bold, listen, Bob. I'll give you that.
If they do it, I'm all in. But I am. if they do it, I am all in for it. But
I don't think.
That scares me.
I can't see Brandon.
You're giving up a 1, basically a 1 and a 3 and a 5 for Sauce Gardner because you just, it was as if you gave up. The one and the
you're swapping
one,
ones.
The 3 and the 5, and you're swapping the one. So, okay, if they do it, that's great.
That's
but man, oh man, I think that's a little steep.
It's a little too rich.
I'm sorry, but yeah, okay.
It's creative.
I would that would fall into going for it. Yeah,
yeah. That's an all in situation.
That's an all in.
Sure. Let's go to Isaiah on a sell. What do you got for us, Isaiah?
I was just final move for me would be a linebacker. You know, I feel like we need a linebacker, and I think everybody put a certain value on cornerback, but I don't think this regime, you know what I mean, never really did. They don't, you know what I mean. It's not that much of a value, even though they got Trey White. But that was just to start it off and start the era off. But I think they can make corners. I think a linebacker. If, like, Devin Lloyd or drop or N'Kobe Dean, something in there, I would like that. I think so.
Okay. So you want a linebacker early, like round one?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. All right. I think it is an under-the-radar positional need for this team, especially with Tremaine Edmonds in a walk year. So,
yeah.
You know, you've got it. I think it's a GMs always have to think a year ahead. And if for some reason – you and the Tremaine Edmonds camp can't agree on a contract extension. Where does that leave you? That's a question that GM Brandon Beat undoubtedly has asked himself.
Right.
And he may have to plan accordingly in the draft. I don't think Devin Lloyd is there at 25. However, I think N'Kobe Dean could be just by virtue of the fact that he is considered to be an undersized prospect. He's 5'10 and change, 220-something. The guy's got I think he's got the best instincts in the draft at the linebacker position. He ran that Georgia defense. I mean, he knew what was coming and when and was doing it all the time. Can he get all the way down there? I think it's possible because he's not an ideal size prospect. So even though he's ranked 12 in the board that our MSU viewers are looking at, I think he could get down there. I don't know if he quite makes it to Buffalo at 25, but he might be in the range.
And I got to say, linebacker is not a high first-round type of player to pick. I mean, the Bills got Tremaine Edmonds, but, he turned into a three-time Pro Bowler, and he's the linchpin of the front seven. So, that's a little difficult to duplicate. He could be there. He could be there. I don't know that that's where I'd go if I'm there. It depends on the board and who's left on there. I think the Bills, a guy like Dean who doesn't tick all the
physical boxes,
I think the Bills are more into physical traits up that high in the draft.
Yeah. We have to take a break here because when we come back, hour number two of the show, we're going to be joined by NFL writer for the Boston Globe, Ben Volen, who's been covering the Patriots as well as the NFL at large. We'll talk to him about the DeVante Parker trade over the weekend for the Pats. among other things within the division next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Steve Tasker, who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual-role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. All right, hour number two here, One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you, and pleased to be joined now by NFL writer for the Boston Globe. And a guy that has been able to enjoy his offseason as recently as last week as he got into some South Florida sunshine at the owners' meetings. It's Ben Volen joining us here on One Bills Live. Thanks for giving us some time, Ben. Were you there long enough to get some vitamin D and tan up the skin a little?
Tan or burn, in my case. The Boston winters, not very kind for me. Don't worry. I did sneak my golf clubs down there. I did get a couple of rounds in.
Oh, nice.
So, when in Palm Beach, you got to do it, right?
Yeah.
Right. So, and for a change, like, there was not much going on with the Patriots. We didn't have to deal with, is Tom Brady leaving or a free agency spending spree or any sort of controversies. Been a very quiet offseason.
Yeah, up until this last weekend, Devontae Parker made a little bit of a splash. And the Patriots have done it before. We mentioned even the Wes Welker thing. The Dolphins-Patriots have done had dealings before with this kind of player. What does it mean? Is it how big a ripple does this make for the Patriots with Devontae Parker signing?
It is interesting in that the trade barely has caused a ripple in Miami. I think the fans, there's so much excitement over the receivers they did get. That, you know, there's a sense of just moving on and being done with Devontae Parker. And I don't sense any frustration or anything that, you know, this is a significant move in Miami. Whereas in New England, it's like, hey, they got a guy on the cheap that could be really good. And the Patriots have seen the very best of Devontae Parker. He's got 11 career 100-yard games, and three of them are against the Patriots, including he had a huge performance in the final game of the 2019 season. He had like 8 for 137. The Dolphins pulled off a big upset. It cost the Patriots the first round bye in the playoffs. Devastating loss, and he just had this huge game over Stephon Gilmore. So if the Patriots get that Devontae Parker, it's a great addition. I think he's most likely going to be taking the roster spot of N'Keal Harry. It's probably who they wanted N'Keal Harry to be, the big physical guy on the outside, but now after three seasons, it hasn't worked out. So I assume Devontae Parker takes that role in the offense of just a big physical guy, can catch a lot of jump balls, red zone target for Mac Jones. You know, they have a speed guy in Aguilar and slot guys in Bourne and Jacoby Myers and the tight ends, Hunter Henry, Jonnu Smith. Now they've got a big physical guy on the outside in Devontae Parker. So in a best case scenario, this is a guy who had 1,200 yards receiving in 2019. He's also a guy that's, it seems like he's never healthy. He's been always banged up, missing games. He missed 7 games last year due to various injuries. So certainly some risk there with the Patriots, but they definitely needed to make some move. And I think they probably got better around Mac Jones this offseason.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's any question. He's already the best physical traits receiver on the roster walking in the door. Were they envisioning him to be a true number one receiver, or does Belichick not really worry about a receiver pecking order like that?
Yeah, I don't think they look at it as 1, 2, 3, 4 as much as we want this type of player. You know, like Devontae Parker and Jacoby Myers and Kendrick Bourne are all very different body types and different types of receivers. Right. I don't expect Parker to be a high volume guy. I still think that's Myers, probably Hunter Henry, probably the running back, whether that's James White or someone else. You know, Parker isn't going to be the guy getting 10 targets a game, but someone in the red zone you can target, someone who can win 50-50 balls. And, you know, N'Keal Harry did have he played a lot of snaps last year. He didn't get many targets, but they still had him in the game as a bigger run blocker and things of that nature. So Parker will get his opportunities. But again, the health thing is key, because he just has really had trouble staying healthy throughout his career. And, you know, at this point, 7-8 years in, it's almost like, you know, this is the player that you are. So I think the Patriots are taking a little bit of a gamble, but when healthy, he's a very good receiver.
You mentioned it at the top, you know, the spending spree the Patriots went on a year ago. Give us a one-year grade for that, how that went. I know Jonnu Smith was a little bit of a disappointment, didn't see too much playing time. What about that spending spree and how the success or failure of that spree last year at this time for the Patriots affected this year's free agency?
Yeah, I'd probably give it about a B-. And, you know, through November, it was looking great. And then the team really kind of fell apart in December and January. And you guys saw it, you know, firsthand, obviously. You know, like a guy like Matthew Judon was phenomenal for the first 3 months of the season and then didn't have a sack over the final six games. Mac Jones totally hit a wall, I think, the weapons. So, you know, this is a team that I still see as being – far away from the Bills. I don't, you know, last year, clearly I think they spent 2 years worth of free agency. A lot of the deals, Nelson Agholor, Jonnu Smith, 2-3 year guarantees. So I think that is playing into why they're not spending a ton of money this offseason. I think they just another year of Mac Jones and another year with these guys, and they hope they can close the gap a little bit. Might be optimistic on their part. We'll see, because I think the Bills kind of showed how far away the Patriots are from truly contending. But, you know, Jonnu Smith, clearly they expected a lot more out of him for the crazy money, record money for a tight end that they gave to Jonnu Smith, and then he barely had 200 yards receiving last year. So they've got to get more out of him. You know, you'd like to see more out of Nelson Agholor as well. But I think obviously it was a one-time only thing for the spending. But you would have liked to see them spend a little bit more than they have so far as well. They've been really bargain hunting, and, you know, we'll see. Belichick is kind of betting on himself that his coaching and their developmental process can get a lot of improvement out of the Patriots. So yeah, we'll see.
You kind of sparked a question in my mind, Ben, when you mentioned how the team hit a wall down the stretch. Being around the team as often as you are, can you speak to, and you may not know this just because we know how tight-lipped they are about just about everything that they do there. But do you have any sense as to how much buy-in there is by Belichick and the staff with respect to sports science, load management, things like that? And the only reason I ask that is because watching that game in Week 16 and then watching the first-round playoff game, the Patriots' defense – looked very old and very slow by the end of the season. Like, they didn't even look like the same team or unit that they did in the first half of the season. And I know that Belichick coaches that team hard. So I'm wondering what the level of sports science and load management is incorporated into the way they do things on a weekly basis up there.
Yeah. I mean, naturally this being the Patriots, you know, they don't tell us too much of what's going on behind the scenes there. Look, I would say a lot of that stuff is pretty strictly determined by the CBA. You know, they're only allowed to have 14 padded practices throughout the entire regular season. And I think, after week 10 or so, it gets even more restricted as the season goes on. So I don't know if it's Belichick wearing down his players as much as it is the composition of the roster, where I think the defense was a little bit older and bigger and more physical, but also slower. And I think Belichick maybe is learning his lesson and is changing some things now. I think he is trying to get smaller and quicker at linebacker, which is what you're seeing, you know, a lot of the NFL trend to. And the safeties that are kind of hybrid safety linebackers, that the Patriots have a bunch of those guys now. They went and got Jabril Peppers from the Giants, along right. with, you know, Kyle Duggar and Adrian Phillips. So I just think last year's defense maybe wasn't constructed well enough with guys who are good players, Dante Hightower, Kyle Van Noy, Jamie Collins, but are a little long in the tooth and maybe not as fast as today's linebackers. And in today's NFL, it's all about speed. So I think we are seeing some changes from the Patriots, certainly on defense with some of their schematics and the way they look at some of the players. but also on offense too. They're not going to have a fullback this year. There's definitely going to be some changes with the Patriots.
What do the Patriots fans and organizations seem to think about the rest of the division? The Bills, you know, Von Miller's coming in, the Dolphins pulling in Tyreek Hill, and the Jets with two top 10 picks coming in the door, and another year with Robert Saleh and Zach Wilson. What's the perception in New England about the AFC East and the pluses and minuses of the teams in it?
You certainly have this segment of the fan base who thinks that, you know, Belichick is the best coach and he makes the most out of his roster, and the Dolphins are the Dolphins, so they're going to find a way to screw things up, and that the Patriots are still going to be competitive. You know, to their credit, they only lost the AFC East by one game last year, although they certainly were from ahead and lost it badly in December and January to the Bills. I think the majority of the fan base probably looks at the Patriots as running third in the AFC East right now. I mean, you've got to love the team that the Dolphins have put together on paper. Of course, it all comes down to Tua, and this is the big make or break year for Tua. We'll see if he can do it or not, but certainly they've given him enough weapons and speed with Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle and Mike Gesicki and others as well. So, you know, the Dolphins on paper, it does look great. You know, that said, as I said before, the Dolphins do usually find a way for it not to work out for whatever reason. The Bills, to me, are still clearly the class of the division. They're coming in, I think, obviously with a big chip on their shoulder, the way last season ended. The Bills, if they had gotten past the Chiefs, you know, why couldn't they have gone to the Super Bowl? And who knows? So I think the Bills are going to be right there again. The big question is, can they, you know, how do they handle the loss of Brian Daboll and some of the coaching staff? Yeah. And that's not something that we're not going to, you know, we're not going to know until the season unfolds. But that will be fascinating to see how much of an impact he truly had on the franchise.
You know, and speaking of coaching changes, the Patriots are not going to have the same offensive coordinator that they've had for the last several years with Josh McDaniels now in Las Vegas. So I know you wrote a story in the Boston Globe last week about how Belichick is betting on himself in terms of, you know, coordinator appointments. He's not necessarily naming anybody. Do we expect a specific person to fill each of those roles, or are we talking multiple people? Like, are we risking too many cooks in the kitchen, or is this Belichick going complete czar mode and taking over everything?
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if Belichick does have more, and that's kind of the buzz that he's going to be more involved in the offense this year, which wouldn't be surprising. The defense, I think, is in better hands with Gerard Mayo, Steve Belichick, his son. I mean, the coaching staff on that side of the ball has actually been entrenched for a few years where,
yeah,
without Josh McDaniels now, he's been their offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach for 10 straight years. So this is the first time they don't have him. And, you know, they brought back Joe Judge. They have Matt Patricia. No one on staff has coached quarterbacks or been an offensive coordinator before. You know, when they lost Nick Caserio last year, they used like three or four different people to kind of, they kind of parsed out everything that Caserio did and split it up between several people. Wouldn't be shocked if that's what ended up happening with McDaniels, that, you know, maybe Joe Judge is the one calling the plays, but maybe Belichick has more of a hand in the game planning and Patricia has more, like there are ways to, I think, split things up. But, you know, they're not saying anything. And Belichick has done this before in Cleveland. He didn't really have an offensive coordinator, and it did not go well. There were, you know, coaches speaking out about how there was confusion about who's calling what and who's responsible. And there was a lot of finger pointing at the time. And there's not like a clear delineation of responsibility. So it will be interesting to see if the Patriots can pull that off this time. And there are questions. Are you putting Mac Jones, your second-year quarterback, in the best position to succeed? You know, Belichick certainly deserves some benefit of the doubt, but there are questions about the composition of the staff and what exactly they're doing there this year.
You also wrote an article a little earlier about, you know, the Tom Brady unretirement and how it all timed up with Bruce Arians and his retirement. Brady's retirement, then unretirement. Bruce Arians deciding he was going to call it quits after Brady, or right around the same time Brady decided he was coming back, and whether Tom Brady had a voice in that conversation. Give us your take on the timeline of who knew what when.
Yeah, it's hard not to see this as Brady coming out on top and sending Bruce Arians to an early retirement. And I think they got along great off the field. I think they love playing golf together. And you know, have a beer after the game or what have you. I mean, no, everyone loves BA the person, but I think there was some concern that he was kind of overstepping his boundaries, which sounds weird as the head coach, but he was almost like a figurehead. His coordinators, Todd Bowles on defense and Byron Leftwich on offense and obviously Brady, they're really the ones calling, you know, running the team, and Arians, because of health, took a step back. And then there was reports that, you know, there was resentment that Leftwich and Brady would do the offensive game plan. And then Arians would come in and with a figurative red pen and say, no, no, no. And, you know, they'd say, well, you didn't, you know, what are you doing here? And so Brady, he retires, but then he goes over to the United Kingdom a few weeks ago and he goes to the Manchester United game and he sees the Glazer family who owns Man U and the Buccaneers. And then literally the next day comes out of retirement. And then 2 weeks later, Bruce Arians magically is retiring and going into the front office. And it's just hard not to look at it as Brady saying, look, you got to figure something out with the coach. And I don't know if he explicitly asked for Arians gone or the ownership took the hint. But now they're, you know, like this is the timing is right. Todd Bowles is ready to run the team. Byron Leftwich is ready to run the offense. Those guys deserve more credit. And, you know, Bruce Arians, though, he's at the owners meetings last week. He's around. He's at the combine. He's doing all the stuff that head coaches are doing. So it's hard for me to see that this was part of some grand plan. And it does seem like Brady kind of pulled the strings with getting the coach.
Yeah, I thought that Arians framed it in an interesting way when he addressed the media, because he basically said, once I knew Tom was coming back, I felt comfortable that the organization was in good hands to hand it off to Todd. And I'm like, that's a real convenient way to frame that. I think it's more like what you're describing. Yeah, you know what? Tom's not coming back until you move off the sideline. We're happy to employ you upstairs, but you got to step aside and let Todd take over this thing, because he's much more comfortable with Byron and him working together than with you weighing in on stuff. So what do you say you move upstairs? We'll get you a nice cushy office with a leather couch, and you can kick back and have Mai Tais any time of the day at work. Yeah. That's what I thought.
Yeah, the Manchester United meeting with the owners is really an interesting fly in the ointment.
Not to mention Ronaldo had a hat trick in the game went to. That guy's 36.
It's interesting, and no question that there's no harmed in the relationship. If Bruce Arians is getting kicked upstairs, and I know Brady and BA probably get along very well, but it could be that the Glazers themselves orchestrated this. Listen, we want to bring Todd Bowles up. We want to give him the best chance of being successful. We're going to ease Bruce out. Would you please come back and take it for one more year to help us make this transition? You can take your pick as to what happened, but there's no question BA was going to be out of there one way or the other.
Yeah, I you know, and to his credit, he built a heck of a staff there, and you know, he's a real testament to you know, one of the few. He and the Bucks are a leader in the diversity efforts for the NFL. They built an excellent staff and did a great job in hiring minorities, hiring women as full-time position coaches. So Bruce Arians has, I think, done tremendous things for the Bucks. He obviously helped bring them a Super Bowl. Tom Brady had a little something to do with it as well. But I don't know, there were some rumblings coming out from the Bucks at the end of the year that the relationship football-wise between Brady and Arians wasn't totally peachy, I guess you could say. And you know, look, like you said, everyone loves Bruce Arians. He's done some great things there. But if he's – it got to the point where I think everyone was ready to take bigger roles, and Arians was maybe a little bit of a progress stopper for guys like Byron Leftwich and Todd Bowles.
And then last one for you, Ben. And again, we appreciate the time. Draft-wise – you know, they lose J.C. Jackson. I know they filled the gap to some degree with Terrence Mitchell and bringing Malcolm Butler back in free agency. Offensive line moved on from some guys as well. You know, Ted Karras is not there now. And as we know, Shaq Mason got moved in a trade with Tampa Bay. So how do you think they play the early stages of the draft this spring?
Yeah, you touched on the areas that they probably have their biggest needs. Left tackle, Maybe not someone for this year because they still have Isaiah Wynn on his fifth-year option, but I have a feeling that this is probably Wynn's last year, so it would serve them well to draft a left tackle to develop for the future. Otherwise, I think it's got to be either receiver or cornerback. I still think, even with getting Devontae Parker, they still could use an elite, especially a young guy who's cost-controlled, first-round pick, comes with that fifth-year option. There's a lot of talk about them getting the Jameson guy from Alabama, tore his ACL. Obviously, he'd be somewhat of a redshirt year, though I would think he'd be able to participate at least in the second half of the season. But, it, you know, an opportunity to get an elite receiver at number 21. It's the same area where, like, the Vikings got Justin Jefferson. You know, that you can find an excellent receiver there. And then cornerback, you're right, after trading or letting J.C. Jackson walk, letting Stephon Gilmore walk. Yes, they signed Malcolm Butler, but they definitely need more depth at cornerback. And, you know, a kid like Kyir Elam is someone I've heard a lot, a big rangy corner from Florida. So I think, you know, the passing game in today's NFL, either receiver or cornerback, that's probably where the Patriots should look in the first round.
Ben, thanks so much. Appreciate your time.
All right, guys. Thanks so much.
All right. Enjoy the rest of the offseason. That's Ben Volen from the Boston Globe joining us, NFL writer, for that paper up there in New England. And it's hard not to think that the Patriots have some similar positional needs to that of the Bills. I would say the only difference is they're probably looking for a more of a true offensive tackle prospect when it comes to the offensive line. You could argue the Bills are looking more on the interior guard, you know, more of a guard tackle type player per se. But then it's wide receiver, it's corner, and those are two positions the Bills are going to be looking at too.
Yeah.
They're right in front of Buffalo, 21.
I still think they have way more needs all the way across the roster
than
the Bills do.
Oh, yes, unquestionably.
So there's way more room for taking the best player available because they need more players around them. I think you can count on one thing, Brownie. I think they're going to try and get a lot faster with their draft picks.
They already tried to do that with a linebacker for linebacker trade with the Browns. They get linebacker Mack Wilson in exchange for linebacker Chase Winovich, who was, you know, not a super athletic linebacker. Mack Wilson is more athletic, so they tried to make a difference there. Devontae Parker, to me, is their most athletic wide receiver on the roster, period. Forget about ability and production. Athletic traits, he's the best receiver walking in the room.
Right.
Day one, whether he knows the offense or not. I think the most interesting part of this conversation is how offensive coordinator is going to work itself out up there, because it looks like
same thing.
Looks like they've got a team effort right now. I'm telling you right now, we saw how it worked in Miami, or didn't work, with George Godsey and Eric Studisville as co-offensive coordinators. That was a mess. It was a mess down there last year.
Yeah, but you got it's a different animal with Bill Belichick heading the staff and the continuity they've had up until this point. They are probably meeting long and hard about exactly who's going to have a voice in the room and who's going to say what. So
you got to have a unilateral playmaker though, or play caller, don't you? Though
I would think so. Yes, I would think so. They've got to have hard and fast rules,
especially with a young quarterback.
Yeah, and I'll say this, though. Everything's, you know, they're not changing anything except maybe the voice in Mac Jones's head. And I don't mean that figuratively. I mean the guy in the helmet. It'll be interesting to see who the actual guy is. I can't see Bill Belichick having a play sheet in his hand. Although he could.
I'd be surprised.
Although he could. See, for me, here, and I've heard this from other coaches as well, when you're the head coach and you're a play caller, the issue is this, that in between series, the play caller needs to have, in today's NFL, the play caller needs to have conversations with the guy playing quarterback about what he's thinking, what they're going to do, the adjustments they're going to make in the next series, what's going to happen in the next series, how they're going to adjust their game plan going forward. And while you're sitting over there talking to that quarterback on the bench about what the next series is going to be, the defense is on the field and the head coach isn't watching because he's over there calling. He's the play caller. And he's over here. He's got his back to the field. That is a real issue. And that's what faces the Patriots if Bill Belichick is calling the plays offensively. I don't think that's going to happen. Bill Belichick,
probably would break out in hives if he couldn't watch his defense play on the side, you know?
Yeah.
So that's going to be interesting because in-game adjustments are vital and mandatory on an NFL sideline. And when you've got the head coach having to do some of that, that means he's not doing stuff that's happening on the field in between series. That's a problem.
I just find it interesting that he's not ready yet, and we're 2 weeks away from the offseason program starting, and he's not ready yet to officially name one person the quote-unquote offensive coordinator. He's probably got an idea on who he wants to handle that stuff, but why aren't you naming the guy?
I'll say,
give the guy his due.
I'll tell you why. Because they don't want to have to interview somebody else. They have to interview, because of the Rooney Rule, they have to bring somebody in and interview. Nobody's going to interview for that job knowing they can't get it. Now you've got a Rooney Rule for coordinators too, so they're not going to have a coordinator this year, which in the building they're probably going to say, hey, you're the coordinator. We're going to call you senior offensive assistant, but you're the offensive coordinator. Call the plays. That's what's going to happen. They just did this so late in the game, and nobody wants to go in there for a sham interview for the offensive coordinator's job of the New England Patriots.
All right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I get it. That's a good point that you bring up. And
so they're just getting around the rule.
There could be some validity to that.
They're getting around the rule.
Yeah.
They'll pay the guy like a coordinator.
The Patriots trying to work their way around a rule? No way.
The defense rests right here.
I have
re-rested my case. Right there. Thank you.
All right, we got to take a break. Jesse in Buffalo, others holding at 803-0550. We will get to you when we come back from break as we have more of your phone calls and some interesting comments from a former Bills receiver who appeared on Good Morning Football as a guest host. We'll tell you about that when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker. Lights are still on. We're happy. Got to get to the phones, though, at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, where we've been asking you today, what is the final move by the Bills that would make your offseason complete? Back to the phones we go, and to Jesse, who's been waiting patiently in Buffalo. What do you got for us, Jesse?
Hey, Chris, Steve. How you guys doing today?
Good.
Doing good.
Hey, so real quick to answer your question, I do think the Bills should trade up in the draft and trade with somebody like Philadelphia who has three picks. I think it's 15, 16, and 19, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
I would trade with them for the 19th pick and not give away our 25th pick. I would give them somebody like, I don't know, Tremaine Edmonds. And I'm only saying it's not because of the talent of Tremaine, but since we're so loaded as a team and we're kind of in the win-now mode, it saves us from really paying him later or making that decision because they have to make that decision regardless. And do you think Tremaine Edmonds is worth that money? I would make a trade there and try to add more talent in the first round because we can't keep all of our picks because we can't pay them all. Secondly, the reason I called was I want to know if you guys seen the Von Miller video of him in free agency.
Yes.
Von Miller or Vlogs?
Yeah, his vlogs.
Yeah, we saw it. Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, yeah, it's detailed. Like, it actually, you can hear Josh Allen on the phone with him.
Yep.
You can hear him talk to Sean McVay. But, yeah, I'll get off and let you guys comment on the draft pick. I don't think all of our draft picks, we can keep them because we have so many quality guys. And as you guys always say, it's not good to always have guys. You got to have guys that can ball. And we have a lot of them.
Yeah.
So all of our draft picks won't really make the team regardless. Secondly, we can't really pay that many picks. So you might as well get rid of some of them or trade them up to get quality guys.
Well, they'll be able to pay the picks they get this year. I think you're talking about the guys like this coming year or so.
I think he's worried about him making the roster.
Yeah, right. I'm talking about paying the guys that are now earning it, like Tremaine Edmonds and Matt Milano and all these guys that are going to have to get extended. Well, Milano is extended, but you get the point, right? That's what he's talking about, right? Paying those guys.
Yeah, because next offseason you got decisions you have to make.
And Devin
some
Singletary.
Of them are going to be difficult.
Devin Singletary,
Dawson
you got to pay.
Dawson Knox, Ed Oliver,
Tremaine Edmonds. Okay, those four. There's four right there.
That's a four pretty big ones.
Yeah, it is. So he's saying trade one or two of those
now
to Philly for the 19 pick and keep the 25 pick. It's awesome if, and I'm all about it. I love and respect those guys. But if you're going to, you know, you got Tremaine Edmonds, Dawson Knox, Devin Singletary, Ed Oliver. You got to get somebody at least as good as those at the 19 pick to do that. If you're going to say, if you're saying one for one, if you're saying like a one for one or with a
well,
fifth
he said
draft.
He didn't want to give up their pick at 25.
Right.
So you get the pick at 19. So you got to give a veteran player
by one to one. I mean the draft pick for the player.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And then plus like a fifth. Like, because you don't think the fifth, sixth, seventh players are gonna, rounds are going to be able to make our team anyway. I get all that. So if you get it, if you trade, like, I'll say Dawson Knox to Philly for the 19 pick plus Buffalo's fifth rounder. It's a hard move. You got O.J. Howard in the fold now, which he'll help, but he doesn't know the offense as well. You know, it's a question mark. You're taking a big chance with the weapons that have proven to be effective for the number one player in the league on your roster. I don't know that you want to do that. Maybe on the other side of the ball, maybe a Tremaine Edmonds. Well, okay. What a Tre'Davious White, one of those guys. You're gonna say goodbye
no,
to him?
No.
He's a cornerstone. Ed Oliver, you're gonna say, okay, Ed, you're gonna go and we're gonna send Ed Oliver and a fifth rounder to Philly for the number 19 pick. Ed's a 10 pick. I don't know.
I think that's too aggressive.
It might
personally.
Be
a little, yeah. And the reason I say that is because if you are truly, in fact, in a go for it year, you don't get rid of a proven player just to get another draft pick, which is a veritable unknown. No matter how much research you've done in the draft, no matter how successful you've been on first round picks, the risk in taking a player at 19 is much higher than relying on Tremaine Edmonds in what could be his last year with the team. You know what you have. It's a known commodity. He's played pretty damn well in this defense, not to mention the fact that he runs it, you know, sets the defense up. To me, you're being over-aggressive for a decision that you don't have to make now.
You don't have
to make that decision until this offseason.
Yeah, that is a trade you make when you're in the throes of the drought. Because you don't think you're going to get good enough fast enough for Tremaine Edmonds to put you over the top. You know what I mean? That's a trade you have when you're 2 years away, or at least another year away from being a contender. We'll trade away this vet because he's going to be too expensive in 2 years, and we're not going to win anyway this year. That's not where the Bills are.
They could win this year. Very well. The whole thing.
No, they are expected to win this year. You don't want to weaken your roster now for a guy who may or may not help you at a spot where you could probably fill in pretty well with the guys you got on the roster now.
Yeah, you're cutting off your nose despite your
right.
face.
Unless it's a slam dunk and the other team takes a bath, I don't make any of these moves for veteran players if you can fit all these guys under your cap. Now, in the coming months, when Tremaine Edmonds comes up for review and his contract's up and Ed Oliver's contract's up and Dawson Knox's contract's up and who was the other one? Devin Singletary's contract's up.
Yeah, the 19 draft.
Now you've got some issues, but not now.
Yeah.
Not now.
You've got to ride it out. Let these guys play
because they're the ones who are the most motivated on the entire roster to hit the home run in this coming contract within a year.
Yeah.
Within 1 year, they're going to be very rich.
Their big money second contract is what's on the line this year. You're going to get the absolute best out of those four, and you don't even have to prod them.
That's right.
Because they know what's at stake personally.
And they're going to be all in with pulling the entire roster along with them. Those guys want to play, and they want to win, and they want to – because they know it's going to be – if they do it, it's going to be a life changer for them.
And I think what we've seen from Brandon Bean for the most part is getting talent in the pipeline ready to replace some of the veteran talent that he knows the fiscal constraints of the salary cap will not allow him to keep long term. The bottom line is this. You can't keep everybody, especially when you draft as well as the Bills have in the last 4 or 5 years. The salary cap precludes you from keeping everybody, especially when you are paying a franchise quarterback. It's just not sustainable. As much as we would like this team to keep everybody and every draft pick success that's come through the door and panned out as a damn good player, you just can't do it in this era of the cap, especially when you have a franchise quarterback. And the Bills have that, so you have to make tougher decisions eventually. And those decisions, I think, come home to roost the upcoming offseason, not now. Like, it wouldn't. That's why I say, very subtly, you know, everybody knows cornerback's a positional need. Yes, you would like to supplement the wide receiver position and interior offensive line. Those are the areas that a lot of people see as in need of being addressed in the draft in some way, shape, or form. A position like linebacker is not seen as immediate need because everybody looks at it, says, you got Tremaine Edmonds, you got Matt Milano, what's the worry? The worry is what's going to happen next offseason. Is Tremaine Edmonds here? It's a legitimate question. He may not be. So what Brandon Bean's approach typically has been is get somebody in the pipeline. So maybe there is a linebacker that comes off the board in round two or three, and people are like, oh, wow, why are we going for a linebacker in round two or three? Because you don't know if you're going to be able to afford to pay Tremaine Edmonds come next offseason.
And if he does come in the offseason, he's got a year behind Tremaine Edmonds watching how Tremaine Edmonds runs the defense and getting to know the defense before he steps in and has to carry it and have the radio in his helmet. And I could see the Bills with Tremaine Edmonds, as much as they love and respect him, having them get to the end of his contract and say, okay, here's what, go ahead, find out what you're worth, and we'll transition you or whatever. We'll match whatever anybody gives you out on the open market.
Or they might just say, this is as far as we can go. If you can do better, more power to you.
That's right.
They've done that before.
The simple fact of the matter is, as big a part of the defense as he is, it's the number one defense. It's been a top five defense three out of the four seasons he's been in the league. Top five, and last year was top. And he's a reason for it, despite what, you know, the criticisms he takes at middle linebacker of the Buffalo Bills. It's not a premier position. It's an important position, but it's not a money-making position. So the Bills can afford to say, okay, go get what you can get, and if you'll give us the opportunity, we'll match it. Because we don't want to set the market, but we will let you try. I could see him doing something like that. And then even then, comes to shove, they say, thanks for everything. You're the greatest. Appreciate you. You know, have a great career. And then go move on.
Yeah.
It's just not one of those positions that moves the needle enough, unfortunately.
Yeah. We have to take a break here. When we come back, who was that former Bills player that was on Good Morning Football this morning with the hot takes on the Bills coming up in 2022? We'll let you know when we return. Here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health, it's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, here we are. One final segment to go on a Monday. One Bills Live is the program. And before we go, we should let you know tomorrow's show we'll be featuring Bruce Feldman from The Athletic. Look forward to our conversation with him, NFL reporter, among other things. We did want to let you know, Good Morning Football, they've been having some rotating co-hosts ever since.
Everybody's going out for vacation once in a while.
Well, and Nate Burleson left, and they haven't replaced him yet with a full-timer.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And Emmanuel Sanders was on the show this morning, and he is high on the Bills and Josh Allen, to say the least. We already knew that, having heard from him when he was here as a player. And he said he's still trying to decide on retirement, plans to wait another month or two before finalizing that decision, said he's still working out. He also said Gabriel Davis is going to be a Pro Bowl-level wide receiver. And he said Jamison Crowder is the biggest under-the-radar move in the league this season.
Yeah,
Offseason.
Yeah, you and I both like the Crowder signing.
Oh, yeah.
He led the Jets in receptions for the last three straight years. And he's at the slot receiver where the Bills would like not only some depth, but somebody to compete with Isaiah McKenzie. Cole Beasley's not there anymore. He's a different skill set than Beasley. He will probably be a little bit bigger play threat than Beasley was, yards after catch. But Beasley's hard to top as a guy who's always available and converts third downs. So, yeah, Emmanuel Sanders saying a lot of nice things. Also jumping on the Josh Allen MVP bandwagon, as a lot of people are. It'll be interesting to see, but it was a good show today with Emmanuel on there.
I will read off a couple of quick tweet sheeters brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving company of the Bills. Nick, Gilmore to Buffalo on a one-year deal would be the final move that would make his offseason complete. Dr. Dusty has a much different approach, Steve. He says, get really good ice-cold brewed coffee in the stadium. We run the gamut here on One Bills Live, and it's going to be the same thing tomorrow. We'll see you at 1.